Almighty Father, as we come before you and gather on your Sabbath day, the day you set apart, each week where we can come and gather to seek your face, we're so grateful that you have honored us with your day, that we could do that for you, because we know that all honor belongs to you anyway, but you have given us life, and you have given us the opportunity to have eternal life one day. We seek your blessings on what we do and on things we say, on your worship, that it would be acceptable and pleasing to you. And as we approach now the special time of year, the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, we look to you that you would honor our worship as we honor you, that it might be of you and not of ourselves. For we know that there are many obstacles in life, and there are many things that we have to overcome. But when we follow you and your way, we know that this is the truth and this is right. So we thank you, Almighty Yahweh, as we prepare for this time and as we gather each Sabbath now to look to you and your word for understanding and to leave the cares of this life each week and totally focus on you as our Father in heaven, and our whole purpose for being. This prayer and our petition we ask in Yahshua's name, hallelujah. You all may be seated. Well, it's so great to see our visitors from near and far, and a time of joyous rejoicing as we come before Yahweh and his day to learn more about him. You know, I always thought that the poem, The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost, epitomized the believer's walk. And it goes like this. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that passing there, had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. You know, I used this poem on one of the very early Discover the Truth programs when we were still filming up there in the tractor shed. And it was a program showing that the true way of Yahweh, the way that we have chosen, each one of us, rejected by most, is anything but a broad, easy way. It's anything but a free ride. It's anything. But what a difference that way makes. There's no comparison out there with the truth. You know, Ephesians tells us there's one faith, one hope, one baptism. Not a whole bunch, not a, you know, smorgasbord of choices. There's only one. And hopefully, and as I told one person who called, I said, if there's more truth somewhere else, tell me about it. I want to be there, because that's the only way that we can honestly worship Yahweh in truth. To do as he says, to honor him and his word. It's really an honor, and think about it, to be able to do that. To be able to say that I worship in spirit and truth. Yahshua taught that just a few would follow the narrow way. That's why it's narrow. You got to squeeze through, you know. It's difficult. The gate is narrow. The way is narrow. You're constantly watching out for, you know, pitfalls and dangers on the way. It's a scriptural teaching, and yet it is the only way that yields the salvational rewards that were promised. And most people just don't understand this narrow way. They don't get it. Because after 2,000 years of corruption, it just sounds weird to the ecumenical ear what we do and what we teach. Let's face it. You're fighting 2,000 years of tradition, of church teaching, of people being so satisfied where they are, they wouldn't even think about doing anything else because they've been led the wrong direction. Others don't want to understand and follow the truth. It requires too much sacrifice of themselves. Well, I mean, worship on the Saturday, I mean, that's my big day. That's my work day. This is what I do when I can't do anything else during the week. I do it on this day. I clean the garage. I mow the grass. I wash the car. I hit the mall. How can I worship on this day? Go to Holt Summit for a feast? Are you really serious? I need my vacation time. I got places to go and relatives and people to see. I only have so much time. Until you take the eye out of it, there isn't much there, is there? Until we come to the place where we realize that the true faith is not about us. In fact, our own lives are not about us, really. Yahweh has given us a gift to live out 70, maybe more years, if we're blessed. To live out that length of time as we wish. He doesn't force us, as we wish. But then one day, face a reckoning. You can do what you want. It's all going to end up same place. Anyway, and that's at the judgment seat of Yahshua the Messiah. We can't have two mighty ones, him and ourselves, but that's how most people live. Well, most people don't even think about him, but they have one mighty one, and that's them. Sure, the broad, effortless, low-octane, low-demand, comfortable way of worship is great until you come to the dead end of it, which Yahshua talked about a lot. You know, the way of man sounds good, but the end thereof are the ways of death. We were once on that road ourselves as well. We came to the stark reality that hundreds of passages in the scriptures were just being ignored. Hundreds of teachings in the word were not being taught. Something's wrong here. Our eyes began to be opened. The road most taken does not harmonize with Yahweh's word. It just is a different way. Yahshua said in Luke 13:24, strive. And it starts off strive. It's not an easy way. It's not downhill ride. You know, it's not something that everybody's going to want to do, because it says strive to enter in at the straight gate. That's narrow gate. For many, I say unto you, will seek to enter in and shall not be able. When once the master of the house has risen up and has shut the door, you begin to knock, to stand out and knock outside, saying, Master, Master, open up to us. And he shall answer and say unto you, I know you not whence you are. But then you're going to say, well, wait a minute. All of that was for nothing? All of that worship, all of that church going I went to was for naught? I mean, we've eaten and drunk in your presence and taught in your streets. But he shall say, I tell you, I know you not whence you are. Depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity. You see, it didn't sink in, didn't get down deep. Because when it starts to get down deep, you start doing what he tells you to do. And you start giving up the sin of the world. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth when you shall see Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets in the kingdom of Yahweh, and you yourselves shut out, thrust out. Why would he bring up this subject if all the churches are doing okay? Why would he even bring this up, telling us that most all of them are not okay? Unlike the eternal security teachings that promise salvation for nothing, you know, the hard fact is that not even we travelers on the narrow way of the word have it all locked up until the end. At any moment, we could reject the word. We could go a different way and give it up. We've seen it happen. We've had many down through the many years just give it up. Go back to where they were, or just do nothing, end up in darkness, really. We've seen it. Where what we thought was dedication was just superficial, birdbath faith, you know, about an inch deep, didn't last. When the water evaporated, they were gone. You know, Paul even said, I strive daily, lest I myself be a castaway. I mean, some guy like that, that had that kind of knowledge and understanding of Yahweh's word, and he says, I worry about myself. I mean, we don't know what obstacle, what temptation, what we could face in the future that could really test our faith. I was looking at doing a little study about the Waldensians and the Albigenses, and these people way back in the first couple hundred years who were persecuted for their faith. Now, they didn't have everything right, but what they had to go through and how they were persecuted, it really humbles you to think that people would do this to other people simply because they had a different idea, a different faith. And someday I'll probably do a message on it, but it's stark. And, of course, we know through history how man is, what he can do to man, to fellow man, when there's disagreement. But Paul says, you know what? I need to be careful myself. And so we need to make certain that we're growing in the right way, the way Yahshua taught. And it's very important at this time of year to do that. Most of our world is very diligent when it comes to seeing their doctor. They get regular checkups, and man, they're just like that. Got to have their health monitored. But what about the more critical spiritual checkups? Does that matter? These self-examinations, those that assess our spiritual health and well-being, do we take time for that? This brings us to the first spiritual evaluation of 2017, and that's the Passover. It's more than just taking in some, you know, bread and fruit of the vine, as they say. The Passover is just packed with significance. Sometimes I think it should be called the Packover or something, because just there's so much there. And generically, it's called the preparation for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and that's where people talk about the preparation day being Friday. Technically, there's only one preparation day, and that's Passover, preparing for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, where you throw out the leavening, get rid of it. We remove the leavening. Now, Friday, of course, is a preparation day, but it's not formally called that in Scripture, but it does serve as that. Passover is a day to prepare for the feast, being a time for removing the leavening and so forth. So over the years, some have asked, well, how I'm not getting it. How can you take of the unleavened bread in the Passover memorial and then eat unleavening, or I should say eat leavening again at Passover day? Well, if you understand what the day is, you don't. You're busy taking it out. I wouldn't be eating it if I wasn't removing it. Or if I was removing it, I wouldn't be eating it. So that's the difference. But aren't you making Feast of Unleavened Bread in 8 days then rather than seven? How can I make it 8 days if I don't eat anything unleavened until the start of the 15th? And this brings us to the two physical characteristics of this day. Two mandates Yahweh gives. You know, we go through the line during unleavened bread, and I always make sure, as I say to the person next to me, make sure you take some unleavening. Because, oh yeah, I don't eat leaven, but do I take in unleavening? Do I take in the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth? You got to do both. And to the caller who asked whether we eat just unleavened bread that week, I say no. We have regular food as well along with it, but we just don't eat leavening. We eat unleavened. And there's a reason for that. Yahweh has his reasons. We just comply on this narrow way. We don't have to question him. This is what he says. This is what I do. But people like to analyze everything, kind of find a different reason. Or why are you doing this? Or, you know, because he says so. You know, he says so. He says, don't eat anything unclean. Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14. Well, there might be some bad things in pork, you know. There might be worms, there might be, you know, trichinosis. And all. Yeah, there might be. But my primary reason is Yahweh says it's unclean, so I don't eat it. That's all I really need. I mean, you can look at the other reasons and realize why Yahweh does it, but the main thing is he says don't do it, so we don't do it. Paul speaks of it in 1 Corinthians 11:28. Let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. Does that mean you walk in that day when you're about to, take of it and start examining yourself? No, there's a preparation time for that. And this time is it. So let a person undergo self-examination, one translation said. Let each look down into his own heart, and only then shall he eat of the bread and drink of the cup. It's like before you're baptized, you have to repent. You have to go through a time of self-evaluation and look at your sin and say, I want no more of that life. I want to give it all up for Yahweh. Same deal with Passover. Because each year we're reminded of what Yahshua went through, what Yahweh commands, and take care of that sin that may linger somewhere in our life. The word unworthily, he said, therefore, I don't know if I read this, shall eat this bread and drink this cup, unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the master. So it's key that we do this. Unworthily is anexios in the Greek, and it means in an unfit manner. Another translation says not taking it seriously. Very important. And that's why we prepare our hearts at this time. We're taking it seriously. Are we better? Now is a time for introspection. You know, Passover has so many meanings and teaches so many significant lessons. It's the time when Israel left Egypt. Yahweh, at the Passover time, slayed the firstborn of those that didn't have the blood around their doorposts and lintel. And that means resolving any unresolved issues we're struggling with or have problems with. Egypt was oppression. Egypt was not a fun place to be if you were a slave. Although Israel's short-sightedness and short memories, they you brought us out here in the wilderness. I want to go back where the lemons or the good stuff, the leeks and the melons were given to us back in Egypt. Boy, did they have a short memory. They forgot about the whips. They forgot about the forced labor. They forgot about working in a hot sun. You know, we went to Israel, and we went in November, and it was very 80 degrees, not bad, Then you walk along in all these ruins and archaeologists digging around when it's 110 degrees. You think, whew, how can they do it? How can they work in this heat? Israel had to. They were slaves. They had to do whatever they were told to do, even when you didn't want to. How many times have you woken up and thought, oh, I really don't want to get up? And, we have my little 10-minute, extender on my alarm clock, and whatever they call that. But anyway, I really don't feel like getting up. Well, you're a slave. You either get up or you're put on a rack or something, You don't mess around. Every day you do that. Day in, day out. Out in the heat, out in the cold, doing whatever you're forced to do. But they couldn't remember that. They're thinking about the good food they had. Good food, yeah, right. Well, it's better than manna. That what's it out there. I can't stand this what's it every day. Manna, 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 manna. So they, try to mix it with something good, a little honey, maybe, whatever, like we do. I mean, I know the kids really love it. Our kids they love unleavened bread because the ladies make it good, Put a little sweetener in it or something. But it's different, and they like it. It's kind of like eating pie crust, and every day eating pie crust, that's kind of good. But they didn't like it, and they had too much of it, so they started complaining. Passover is the ultimate remedy. It means the forgiveness of sin through the shedding of blood, either animal blood, which covered the sin, or Yahshua's blood, which removed it, paid the penalty for it. And this day also binds us to Yahshua. He said you're to eat and drink him. Now, I don't know how much closer you can get in an analogy of coming to be with one with him, to eat and drink him. Catholicism takes it one step further. They have what they call transubstantiation, where they actually say the body, his body is in the bread and his blood is in the drink. Literally. And that's what the Reformers really hated. So that's a bunch of crock, especially Martin Luther and I guess Calvin. That was one of the things they hated, and one of the things they railed against was this idea of the body and blood are literally in the Passover emblems. So he pays for our sin, unlike the mere covering, which the animal sacrifices of old did. But they look forward to Yahshua's sacrifice, of course. Passover is a time for taking a reality check of our lives and what we've done over the past year. And also taking time to examine what we believe and teach, which we do in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, because that's part of leavening is false teaching. So we throw that out and we have to have something, so you look for the truth, the right teachings. And it also is a time we assess our walk. We renew our sincerity, we renew our dedication, and we say we're going to do more this year, the rest of the year. We're going to walk closer. We're going to, you know, the world likes to give up things for Lent, you know, or they make New Year's resolutions. Well, this is the right way to do that. This is the right way. You start making changes when you cast out these things that leaven after the Passover. Well, many today have the idea that Yahweh's plan of redemption was finished when he was impaled on Passover. Yahshua was impaled on Passover. They see his death as the end of a lot of things, including the old Israelite-Jewish system of obedience, especially to the laws of the Old Testament, as well as the virtual end of Israel as the chosen of Yahweh, now taken over by the chosen in churchianity. That's how they look at it. It's an end of everything. No, it's not. It's the start. It's the start. You know, do a study of Christianity, and you'll see the term Jewish Christian come up all the time. Jewish Christian. Now, somewhere in the mind of people reading that, something's got to click. Jewish Christian. Is that a contradiction? I mean, my church would tell me that's a contradiction. It can't be a Jewish Christian. It's either one or the other. What does churchianity think their Christian faith originally sprouted from anyway? Greek Gnosticism? Zoroastrianism? Mithraism? What do they think? Their own Savior was a Jew. What do they think? They firmly believe that Yahshua's death, followed by his resurrection, marked the beginning of an entirely new era under the heading Christianity. I have news. Yahshua wasn't a Christian. That came along later, and then all the baggage came with it, all the false blending, the syncretism with false beliefs. That's all wrapped up in that term. I don't blame the people who call themselves that. I blame the teachers who perverted it, who perverted the truth. And along with their false assumption is that the New Testament scriptures, and only those scriptures, are necessary today. When over and over, hundreds of times, the Old Testament is quoted in the New Testament. Does that make any sense that you would throw the Old Testament out when the New Testament doesn't even do that? Lucas and I were talking about a call we got about the Apocrypha this past week. And you know, reminded that none of the apocryphal books are quoted in the New Testament. The Old Testament books are quoted over and over and over. All over the place. I mean, get your Restoration Study Bible to my favorite chart, Remarkable Harmony of the Testaments, there in the middle, and you'll be blown away. How the two meld, how the two merge, how the two harmonize with each other. It's all the same teaching with a little different inflection when it comes to, you know, the administration of the priesthood and, of course, the sacrifices. That's the basic difference. That's the basic difference with the New Testament over the Old. So, along with their false assumptions is that the New Testament scriptures, and only those scriptures, are needed, but they ignore what the New Testament teaches. And the same thing goes with Yahshua. They like to tell you what Yahshua did. Of course, that's half of it. Of course, it's important. He died to pay the penalty for our sin. But they don't like to talk about what he taught. He talked about the kingdom over and over and over. You hear anything about the kingdom? All you hear is, oh, Uncle Bill, he's up in heaven now, and that's the end of it. Guess he's playing a harp. Sorry, Carol, I didn't want to pick on you. But, you know, I guess that's what they think. This is it. This is all you do. You live this life, you die, you go up and roll around on clouds. They don't realize there's a whole nother world up there about the kingdom and what's going to happen after. This life is nothing compared to the aeons, the eternity of salvation in the kingdom. And this is what we're preparing for. This is why we do what we do. Along with these false ideas, they look the other way when they read about their Jewish Messiah, keeping the Sabbath and feasts, and teaching the disciples to do the same. Mentally, they just run the other way. As I mentioned, this chart, if you got an RSB, look at that remarkable harmony of the Testaments, and look down there at the bottom on the left side. Feasts of Yahweh in the New Testament. They're all in the New Testament, believe it or not. There's a whole list of them, and the passages you can look up. Yahshua kept the Passover. Yahshua kept tabernacles with his parents, you know, in Jerusalem. The disciples kept them. Paul said, I must by all means keep this feast that comes to Jerusalem. How can you go through the Bible with blinders? You know, you don't look at anything else but what the church tradition has taught when it's right there in front of you. So much error in tradition. Yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. They call him a saint because they assume he was a devout Catholic. There's questions about that. He's commemorated by Episcopal churches, by the Lutherans, by the Orthodox. Was he a real Catholic? He wasn't even recognized for 200 years after his death. He was never sainted by a pope. And there's even evidence that he kept the Sabbath. And I wonder about the feast days as well. I haven't studied, dug deep into it enough, because there isn't much. He wrote a couple things. He did follow some of the traditions of the Roman Church, but I don't think he was 100%. He was up there, and by the way, he wasn't Irish anyway. He was British. He was Southwest Britain is where he was born. But he went up to Ireland, and he tried to convert these people, get them to follow the Bible and the scriptures, and you know, he kind of did his own thing up there. I guess he relied on whatever support he could get from the church, quote church, but it's fascinating. And people have this idea, you know, shamrocks and good luck and green and all that. What's that got to do with anything? It's just tradition that added on, you know, it piled on. And so that's what we do. We wear green and we don't really know why. We keep Xmas. We don't really know why we give presents. Because when they came to Yahshua, the wise men didn't turn to each other and give presents. They gave the gifts to him as a king. That's the reason. He was a king. And that goes back to our mentioning of the kingdom. He was going to establish a kingdom. And they, of course, the apostles and disciples thought it was right then. Well, when are you going to start the kingdom now? We're ready. You know, this hated Roman government. We're ready to have that demolished. We want to now set up your kingdom and be with you. And he said, not time yet. Hang on. We got a lot of people who need to hear the truth in the centuries later, in the millennia later. And then one day I'll come back and I'll set up my kingdom and I'll overthrow all the kingdoms of this world. Well, Yahshua, as the Passover lamb, held the key role in a continuation of Yahweh's design. Continuation. Not something new. There are only a few changes. Key to that plan is the Passover. Why would he keep it and endorse it and promise it and promise his disciples that he would keep it again with them in the kingdom? Think about it. Then almost immediately abolish it when he died. That's what they'll teach you. Passover is gone. Now we celebrate Easter because he arose on Sunday morning, which Easter has nothing to do with the resurrection, and he didn't rise on Sunday morning. There's so many layers of error in teachings today. You got to get past all of that. But it makes people mad because they take it to heart what they've been taught. My parents wouldn't lie to me, you know. And I get that. I can understand that. But the truth is truth, you know? The truth is truth. The Passover is the first of the annual observances of Yahweh and represents the starting point for the rest of Yahweh's plan. Each feast has a meaning. Each feast is a puzzle piece that comes together till you see the whole picture. I get it now. I see it all from beginning to end. I see it from Passover through unleavened bread, Pentecost, trumpets, atonement, tabernacles. It's all there. The redemption plan is all there. What's Easter got to do with it? Bunny rabbits and straw grass. Green straw grass or whatever. Anyway, the original hopes that Yahweh had of uniquely choosing a people all his own who would follow and worship him exclusively had now changed. We saw that in the Bible study. We're finishing up, well, we have finished up the book of Joshua. And, you know, Israel could never quite stay on track. Joshua was so earnest. He says, you know, if you choose not to go this way, this is, you know, he's 110 years old, about to die. He said, you can do what you want. But as for me and my family, Joshua, what, 24, 14, 15? For me and my family, we're going to serve Yahweh. I don't care. I've done my best. I've led you people in the right way. I know it's right because it's scriptural. And if you can't stick with it, this is the bottom line. I'm going to keep it myself because I know it's right. And my family, I'm going to teach them as well because I know it's right. And I hope that you'll stick with it too, but if you don't, you can go the way you want. And of course, we know they did. They went the way they wanted to. They pretty much removed all the pagan people up in the promised land, up in Judea and so forth. And, you know, still, during the mop-up operations, they would come across some pagan idol and, oh, great, what's this, you know? With all of that Yahweh did to them, they turned and started worshiping the way of the heathen. And that's exactly what's happened since century one. The churches have followed a Roman system that went the way of the heathen just so they could amalgamate all these people coming into their Roman Empire. The church is all about an empire. Yahweh never established a hierarchy like you find in the church today, the Roman church today. Pope, bishops, archbishops, monsignors, it goes on and on and on. He established a few offices: pastor, minister, deacon, teacher. That's about it. But it wasn't a hierarchy. When they had a problem in Acts 15 about, oh, do we have to convert to Judaism first before we come into the truth? Paul says, haven't heard that one before. You know, we get hit all the time with stuff we haven't heard before. Most of it, you can dismiss it easily. But this one kind of got him. He got him flat-footed, and he said, oh, well, we better go to Jerusalem, talk it over with the others. He didn't say, oh, wait a minute, I'm in charge. This is what we're going to do. They went to Jerusalem. They talked it over. They pounded it out until James says, you know what? Here's what I would say. And he gave his assessment. And then they thought, hey, that's wise. We'll do that. We'll worry about it. These pagans coming in, they'll learn eventually the truth because they're going to hear it every Sabbath day being preached. They'll hear about the law. But until that point, stop drinking blood. Stop these pagan rituals. Stop these sacrifices that you're doing and come to the knowledge of Yahshua. So that's what they did. But anyway, the Passover is a continuation of the truth. And it's a starting point for the rest of Yahweh's plan. And Romans 9:27 says, a remnant of Israel shall be saved. Wait a minute, is this remnant Christianity? Do they go to church? So many unanswered questions on the broad way. When we look at the Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread that follows, we see a progression of truth and following that truth. It's a progression. Yahshua wasn't a divider. He wasn't dividing Israel off from Christianity. He was a uniter. He said you can, as Paul tells us, as he taught Paul, you know, that's why we call Paul an apostle, because he saw the risen Messiah in his glorified state, basically, or at least in his post-death state, that we become part, become joined to Messiah, Romans 9 and 11. We come grafted in to Israel. We don't separate from and start a new religion. He was a uniter, a unifier, a welder of both old and new. So Passover is a memorial of an actual event that happened back in Egypt in the Old Testament in Exodus, and also something that happened in the New Testament through Yahshua the Messiah and the feast that follows. They're all shadows of events that foreshadow something even greater. What Yahshua did by becoming the Passover lamb was fulfilled only in part. He spoke of yet another fulfillment of Passover in the future. We see the importance of this special observance throughout history, from ancient days to the kingdom. The Passover is key to Yahweh's blueprint for salvation. There's so much involved in this observance, so much meaning. When the firstborn from every house, lacking the blood on the doorposts, Yahweh sent a clear message to mankind. You see, it was the firstborn that got twice the family inheritance, which was known as the birthright. You know, I imagine there's some, you know, maybe a good number of Israelites who didn't bother with the blood. Well, their firstborn would have died like the Egyptians if there were. So with the death of the Egyptian firstborn, Yahweh demonstrated that those not covered by the blood of the lamb, that had meaning when they put blood around their door, like the heathen, are going to have no inheritance in the heavenly kingdom. No inheritance. Firstborn, no inheritance. The other lesson we learn is that we're covered by the blood only if we follow Yahweh's instructions down to the letter. Does that make us a legalist? No. It makes us dedicated to Yahweh. He says it, I do it. If anyone in Israel had not done exactly as Yahweh commanded, perhaps not putting the blood on there, but only on the side, say, he would have faced the same consequences as the Egyptians. He didn't do it right. Well, you don't really have to. I mean, just, you know, I came in, kind of make a little example out there. No, you do it right. And that's what we try to do in Yahweh's word. Does that make us any better than anybody else? Please don't confuse our obedience that we're trying to impress somebody. The only one we're trying to impress because we love our Father is Him in what we do. People jump to conclusions all the time. Well, you think you're better than everybody else. No, I don't. I think I'm worse than everybody else. Paul said, you know, I'm the greatest of sinners. That's the attitude we should have. I got a long way to go when I start realizing how far I fall short. Just the opposite. Just the opposite. It would have been a halfway religion had they just done partway, doing less than expected just to sneak by, because it's easier that way. You know, I'll just keep a feast if I'm up to it, if, you know, my finances allow, or, you know, if everything's going well and I don't have somewhere else to go, yeah, maybe I'll show up. Halfway. Yahweh had to see the blood on the lintel as well as on the doorpost. Exodus 12:23, for Yahweh will pass through to smite the Egyptians, and when he sees, and this is of course the death angel, but you know, the angel was his representative, so we say Yahweh, same thing. And on the two side posts, Yahweh will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses to smite you. For us, it means that if we aren't completely covered by the blood of Messiah because of some unrepented sin we're harboring, some hatred against a brother, or, you know, something in the past that we haven't gotten free of, we're in dire straits. We face consequences. And rather than having less meaning for us, the Passover and feasts that follows have much more serious implications than they ever had for Egypt. Because they were living basically in the physical, yet there were spiritual meanings in everything they did as well. Because the two testaments merge. If we're not in obedience, we have better start learning some things. You know, looking back in history, we see that Yahweh began a recalling of his people at the Passover. Perfect time to recall us as well if we've kind of grown maybe a little bit lukewarm. We haven't quite been dedicated like we should have been. We, started thinking more about ourselves than of Yahweh. He does the same today in the New Covenant in Passover. It's an annual reminder of what his elect should be doing, what it means to be an elect, not to get involved in the sin of the world, not to be enslaved by it, by influenced by it, in a spiritual Egypt. Passover offered a chance to rededicate their lives to him, to turn back again in sincerity. Exodus 12:19, it's a warning against anyone who would not take the Feast of Unleavened Bread seriously as well. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. That's pretty plain. You remove the leaven, and people say, well, you know, how about if I just take it out of my house, put it in my garage, or maybe put it in a container outside in the field somewhere, and then when it's all over, I'll bring it back in. Doesn't that comply? No, it doesn't. Think of the spiritual ramifications of what you just did. You're supposed to remove what offends, not bring it back in when it's over. You remove it. And I know it's tough having to throw out boxes of crackers and maybe some loaves of bread. That's why right now we should be using it up. It's tough because that costs money, but yet in the long run, in the big picture, what is it? It's nothing compared to our own salvation. It's nothing compared to the blessings of Yahweh. So, this is what we have to do. He says, he that eats leavening shall be cut off from the congregation. Therefore, each time that we participate in the Passover, year after year after year, and the feast that follows, we undergo a spiritual renewal, a spiritual assessment of where we stand with Yahweh. And that's why it's so critical we keep these annual times. The Passover has a lot of meaning, but every one of his feasts does. Every one teaches a lesson in salvation, in where we stand with Yahweh, in what his plan is. Why we keep them is for a reason. Why would Yahshua, not keep them? Why didn't he just ignore them? Say, well, we're in a new dispensation now. Don't go to all that trouble. He even died on Passover. He died. It was that significant. If you expect him to do for you, you got to do for him first. In a word, true worship is all about Yahweh, not us. Not what's best for me, not what's easiest for me. It's about him. Turn to Hebrews 9:13. It says, for if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to Elohim, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living Elohim? How much more important is Yahweh's very Son sacrificed for us? It's time to rededicate our lives to the Father as we consider the sacrifice of Yahshua. We'll do that when we pass over time, when we take of the emblems. You know, as people are called peculiar, and I always thought, peculiar. Are we really that weird? I mean, to the world, maybe it looks that way. What kind of Bible are you reading anyway, they might ask. Who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. You look at every one of the patriarchs, every one of the New Testament stalwarts, they were zealous. Nothing could stop them. They wouldn't back off. Well, peculiar doesn't mean weird in the sense that we might think of it. It means beyond usual. special, one's own. To Yahweh, his people are special. They're not the usual. They're not the run-of-the-mill. They're special because of how they follow his word. You know, this verse is speaking directly of Yahshua's sacrifice at Passover and what it does to renew our dedication to him when you think about it. If you're not seen as different by the world around you, you need to reassess your life, because we're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be not in with the world. Yahweh's people should be an uncommon light to those who are around them. And further, this world sinks into the abyss, the more the light should shine, the more distinction they should see in this growing darkness of our world today. Yahweh's people should be vastly different from the world and different from churchianity, because it sets its standards and values mostly by public opinion. And that's how it's done throughout the years. Call a council, there's a dozen of them, call a council and see what everybody thinks. And what the majority think, that's what we're going to do, instead of going right to the word. They look for majority opinions, kind of like polls, political polls. Take an opinion. Whatever that opinion is, that's what's right. And you know what? The majority is almost always wrong. So why would we even do that? If the masses don't like a certain stand the church takes on a moral issue, they'll eventually bend to accommodate. They'll bend and blend in with the world because that's what's popular. Doesn't mean it's right, but that's what's popular. The appalling lack of right biblical counsel from those who know better, those who are ordained to the word, supposedly, who have given up their life for the word and don't teach it, that's inexcusable. If more had the backbone to speak out against sin, the fewer we would have who don't see a difference, a distinction in behavior. You got to draw the line. You got to show the difference between right and wrong. Come the judgment, Yahshua isn't going to survey the public. What about Jay over here? What about Sally over here? What do you think? Led a good life or not? What do you think? Raise your hand. Is that how Yahshua's going to judge? Were they good to you? Or is he going to compare their life with the word? Because that is the ultimate judge of all of us. His standard. His standards are right and true and forever, and it won't matter a bit if everyone else thinks differently. It doesn't matter. He brought a standard, and he died for that standard. And if we don't meet it or show sincerity in efforts to meet it, we face condemnation. There's no negotiating. He said, you're going to be shut out because of your iniquity if you don't repent. You know, the insidious moral collapse that we see everywhere is the action of leavening. It permeates and works slowly. I remember my grandmother, I wish you could taste her bread. She's no longer, of course, with us. But, man, we'd go to her house. She had five little round loaves. And there, oh, it smelled so great. Before we hit the sack, all that bread was gone. Family of four come there. We just devoured it. But I remember watching, I'd sneak in and pull the oven door. I watched that bread. And, it looked like it was 10 minutes ago. And I'd come back and look again 5 minutes later. It looked about like it was. It took time to rise. That leavening had to leaven. It had to produce, the gases that permeate the dough and make the little holes and make it taste so good and spongy and all that. But it worked slowly. Spiritually, same thing. We talked about leaven. It works slow. You don't always see it happening at the time. But over time, the influence is there. The influence is there. When we were in grade school, we learned about the changes that happen to substances. We learned about the physical changes, like, water turning to ice or steam. That was physical change. Didn't change the water itself chemically. But then there's also chemical change that actually changes the nature of the substance. A physical change leaves the basic substance intact. Leavening induces a chemical change where you have the sugar molecule acting on the leavening agent producing alcohol and bubbles, you know, carbon dioxide and all that. It actually changes the substance. The spiritual inner man is changed by spiritual change, spiritual leavening. Through sin, we become fundamentally altered. Through repentance, we can be a new creation again. To be constantly exposed to the leaven of hypocrisy, false teachings, wickedness of the world, it's eventually going to create a dynamic spiritual change in us, not unlike the chemical changes that we see in our world. And it's so insidious. The lesson of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is to make us aware that there are things out there, there's dangers out there, there's influences out there that will change us. These influences, if we're not aware, can be permanent as well. To be unaware of leaven is to be unaware of the satanic influences that can destroy us. You can't constantly be bombarded by trash and not get any on you. But that's what we see out in the world of sin. You can't expect to, you know, get on through it, uninfluenced by it, and think that, you know, it's not going to faze you. Because it does. It does in small ways. Satan's very good. Oh, he knows. He knows how to get to you. He knows what influences you, and he'll use that against you, no matter what it is. He knows how to do it and how to use it. He knows how to get to us. He gets to us by our entertainment. He gets to us by our family influence. He gets to us. You name it. We've got so many things against us that we need Yahweh's help. We need his strength. And we get that when we obey him. We don't know exactly when Yahshua is going to come back, when the present mature generation is gone. I believe it's going to be about that time. The generation still holds a standard. The new generation, you hear it all the time. They do interviews. They don't have a clue. They don't know what our country was like, our culture was like. They don't know. They just know what they've been taught in college or whatever, what they've been taught by Hollywood. They don't know. And when you start removing the standard of those that grew up with a standard, when they're gone, like they say, heaven help us. So we don't know. But we do know that when that time comes, Yahshua will not continue on with this world and its corruption, because it will be totally leavened in a corrupt way. You can't go against what Yahweh has established as universal truth and the world not self-destruct. It's a testimony to Yahweh's power that, you know, during the 1960s, a time of social upheaval, social decay, gross sin, open sin, anything goes, reject authority. It was a time of moral and spiritual decline that we're still feeling in this day. That Yahweh was raising up a people who would stand in the gap, who would stand for his truth and challenge the error of thousands of years, not just the perversions of a pop culture. The movement that we are part of began in that time. It's kind of amazing. And you know, when you see that there's going to be two witnesses standing on the streets of Jerusalem, and when all the rest are taken away on the wings of an eagle for protection, these two are going to be standing there in the streets proclaiming Yahweh as his witnesses. He always has his witnesses. And when things start to get bad, they start coming to the fore. You know, our job is clearly cut. We face even worse corruption than ever. The love of many has been and is waxing cold. We're a generation wandering through life with no other goal and purpose but to get ahead, beat out the other guy. He's competition. It's a generation without natural affection that looks at others as someone that needs to be out of our way. Never used to be that way when I was growing up, even. Wasn't that way. People had a concern and love for one another, natural affection for one another. You saw some little kid about to do something dangerous, I don't care if he's not yours. You grabbed him, protected him. Today, you try to do that, you're going to face a lawsuit. I mean, it's everything is upside down. We're in a generation that does not know the Father, who's poised with sword in hand, about to cut the chaff from the wheat. Are we? Who are we as a society? You got to ask that. Oh, here we are. It's over here in Romans 1:28. And even as they did not like to retain Elohim in their knowledge, Elohim gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Because they didn't know him. They have no standard of behavior. They have no guideline. They have nothing to go by. So they just do whatever feels good and whatever they think is right. Ours is a culture of followers who will listen to anyone so long as they don't preach the truth. You know, when Yahshua returns, will he find the faith on the earth, the scriptures say? Will he find the faith on the earth? That's a question he himself asked in Luke 18:8. He says that for a reason. He knew full well it was coming. Of course he knew it. Yahweh says, here is the way, walk in it. It's truly an amazing phenomenon that we see going on. People want the latest craze, but to go back to their Old Testament roots, not on your life. The Passover was a night when Yahweh executed judgments on the false religions of this world. The false religions. Therein is a huge lesson for all of us. And hence the corruption that took place. Unless we think that this is just an ancient judgment on ancient people, we got to think again. If we go to Revelation, we see some of the same plagues unleashed on this earth at the last days of judgment on this world. If you read Revelation 8 about the hail, about the blood, about the locusts in 9. You know, just as Israel was protected from the latter plagues, we felt the effects of the initial ones. As Israel, we had to learn to overcome as Israel. The same thing with us today. We'll have to go through a few plagues. But ultimately, if we have the faith in Yahweh, he will protect his people. But we got to keep strong in his truth. So Yahweh's people will be protected after a certain few plagues and unleashed. If you look at Revelation 7:2, we don't have a lot of time to go through these. But how are they protected? Scriptures call it a sealing. Sealing with his name on their foreheads. So to keep Passover is a serious matter. We want his name on our foreheads. And so Yahweh punished even believers in the New Testament with sickness and death when they observed Passover carelessly. I will close with this one because this is significant. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 27, where we read, "Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup of the Master unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Master. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup. For he that eats and drinks unworthily eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Master's body. For this cause many are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep." That means they died. They didn't take it seriously. "For if we would judge ourselves, we should not be judged." So I guess that's the message today. We need to start examining ourselves and judge ourselves. It's important that we do at this time of year. Passover is going to be kept on the night of the 10th of April, which starts the 14th of Abib. And I pray that you're preparing for that time. It's like only 3 weeks away. Spiritually, mostly, but physically as well, when you start removing or using up the leaven. I think we have a list of, I think Brother Lucas put it on the website, of the leavening agents and all of that. You can look that up and become a label reader when you go to town. I'm always forgetting. My wife says, "Wait a minute, we got Passover coming up." Oh yeah, that's right, I can't buy that bread or whatever because we won't have it eaten up. But it's important that we prepare in all ways for this time. And Yahweh would like that. He wants us to prepare, and he wants us to be ready, because it's the key time of his plan of salvation. So may Yahweh bless you.